Shalom Mishpucha. Shalom, family. Mishpucha is a Hebrew word, and that's what it means, family. We're the Mishpucha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people, where the middle wall of separation has come down, finally, to form the one new man. Getting ready, Mishpucha, to blow the grandest shofar or the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone everywhere to hear the good news. We want everyone everywhere to be red hot for the Messiah. I'm interviewing Mary Nahas. I'm talking to her at her home in Reidsville, North Carolina. She's the author of a book about her father. The title of the book is The Journey of Private Galeone, and subtitled How America Became a Superpower. And if it wasn't for her father, we'd be speaking Russian in the streets of America today. It is the most fascinating story. It shows the intrigue of the military trying to cover up what was going on in the concentration camps. But the hero of this book is God. You can see step by step of how God led her father. For instance, her father was in the army, and it's during World War II, and he's in Germany. And he starts smelling something. Tell me about that, Mary.
They had pulled over to rest, and he all of a sudden smelled an odor that gave him a gut feeling to follow the train. When he asked permission to go, the sergeant said no because it was toward the end of the war and they didn't want to take risks. But by the end of the night, my father said that the feeling was so strong to follow the trains because he would find prisoners that he left anyway, in the dark at around 9:30. And during his walk of following the trains, his wound was hurting, and he was going to turn around and go back and abort the mission when he had a supernatural experience. He said that a strong force pushed him right at the point when he was going to turn around and abort the mission. He turned around to see who pushed him, and nobody was there. Then the force grabbed him at the elbows and turned him around as though to say, no, don't turn around. Stay following the train. My father knew that something bigger than himself was leading him to the end of the tracks. And at the end of the tracks, after 5 days of following the train...
How could he be walking those 5 days? He had been injured.
He said that when the force pushed him, it also simultaneously gave him a resurgence of strength and energy, and his legs that were wobbly and weak before were now strong, and the wound wasn't hurting anymore.
Wasn't he concerned about leaving the troops? Was he AWOL?
He never intended on going AWOL, but following the force, I guess you could say, yes, he was AWOL.
Okay, so he's following the tracks because he knows tracks... Maybe there's people. Maybe there's Holocaust survivors. So at the end of the 5 days, what happened?
Well, in his mind, he was thinking following the tracks would help him to catch the Nazis as they're transporting the prisoners. And in his mind, he was envisioning himself jumping on the train and putting a gun to their heads, saying, take me to the camp. But what happened was, at the end of the tracks, he found a train car filled with dead people, prisoners, and he found the mouth. The train tracks led directly inside of the mouth of the secret tunnel to the factory where prisoners were forced to manufacture the world's first ballistic missile for Wernher von Braun.
And tell me about that German guard that came running towards him shooting.
Yes, my father had another miracle there. Because the bodies were naked, he wanted to identify whether they were Russians, Germans, or American soldiers so that he could figure out what was going on inside the secret tunnel. But when he was trying to move their arms and legs around with his gun, his legs became tired from the five-day walk, and they gave out, and the ammo clip fell off and made a noise. A German guard came running over, shooting at him. My father jumped on top of the tunnel because there was nowhere to take cover, and he was shooting at him at close range from the ground to the top of the tunnel. My father said, looking back on that, he didn't realize till the end of his life, that there must have been an angelic shield around him because the bullets were going and whizzing, whistling past his ears, but none of them hit him. And he believed it was because God was not going to let him die there until those prisoners were found and rescued, and my dad needed to get out of there to report what he had found.
Now, but he actually tried to get into the camp by breaking the lock. What happened?
After the shootout, he found the main gate, and he found prisoners face to face at the gate. They had heard the shootout, and they got very excited when they saw it was an American soldier. So they ran to the gate so that he would see they were prisoners in need of rescue. He said he was shoving his gun up inside the lock, trying to twist it, but he couldn't break it. So he was too exhausted at that point, but he realized he needed to start walking and looking for help. He couldn't go any further. He had to rest. He slept for a couple hours, and then, see, he was a timber wolf. They only did their scouting at night. So he said it was perfect to take a couple hours rest, and then sundown came. And then he went and, you know, searched for help. And another miracle was that he found soldiers broke down on the side of the road, and they took my father back to their commanders, and my dad reported everything to them of what he had found, that he had found something major with a secret tunnel and dead prisoners. And the commanders went back with my father, and they all broke into the camp together and drove in.
How about when your dad radioed the 3rd Armored Division and they got lost? Explain that.
Yes. The soldiers who took my dad back to the camp and broke in with him also drove him back to the sergeant. My dad explained to the sergeant that his hunch panned out and that he had found a camp. And the sergeant told him, you could never, because you left without permission, you can never tell anyone that you saved the people. But I want you to radio the 3rd Armored Division and give them directions to the camp. This miracle that happened when he radioed the 3rd Armored, my father got confused as to the directions because the 3rd Armored had passed that camp. So my dad had to give them directions coming backwards. And it got all messed up, and the 3rd Armored Division ended up finding a second camp by accident on the way where prisoners of Dora who were too weak to make the missiles had been dumped to die. And so it shows that God was trying to rescue the weakest first.
What would have happened if your dad hadn't found that camp when he did, and perhaps the Russians had found the camp first? What could have been the future of America?
Well, History Channel actually answered that question. They did a show recently, and they said that if Dora had not been found when it was, the footprint on the moon would have been Russian. And we would be speaking Russian today. And they also said in another History Channel documentary about spy technology that America probably would have been hit with a nuclear war.
And, you know, some of the descriptions you have in the book, and the book has pictures, of course, of Holocaust survivors, but literally this was compared to Dante's Inferno. Tell me what they found was going on in that camp with the Jewish people.
Too horrible to recite. Some of it is just unbelievable. But I'll tell you some of the things I can say is that the people were methodically starved and beaten and forced to work at top speed with no food or water in their stomachs. They were diseased over time. They were threatened with fear was put on them when they would hang people just to teach them lessons and to intimidate them so they wouldn't try to escape. They would hang people with wood in their mouths, and they'd have to work under the dangling bodies, making the missile with dead people hanging over them. Their friends. It was horrifying. Babies were burned in the Nordhausen camp. Women were found with their breasts cut off. It was just horrible.
Why didn't they just sabotage the missiles, knowing they'd be used against people that would be their liberators?
Brave prisoners did sabotage the missiles. They did all that they could. They arranged poor connections. They urinated on wiring. They did all they could, but, you know, they were hung for it.
It's you describe that in the book, that they were made examples. And when your father found the camp, he didn't even understand what he had accomplished, did he?
No, and another miracle was about to happen after all those miracles of finding the place and the people. And the Pentagon, when they learned that the world's first ballistic missile was being made in concentration camps, they ordered the confiscation of the rocket scientists and the missiles. Now, Russia also came in because the American troops forgot to take the machines and the production team. We got the top German scientists who created the missile, and we got all the missiles, but Russia got the machines and the production team. This caused the sharing of power, which was a miracle of God in his wisdom. The sharing of power between Russia and the United States caused a unique situation that the Department of Defense calls mutual assured destruction. That is where, when both sides made missiles and weaponry and satellites, one side can't move without the other side seeing through satellite technology, and one nation can't strike without it resulting in the other nation's, you know, mutual destruction. So in God's wisdom, causing the sharing of power between Russia and America caused world peace through the threat of mutual destruction. This alone is the greatest miracle that came out of this. Because if the Russians would have made an exclusive capture of the missiles behind America's back, not only would we be speaking Russian, but today Russia is helping the terrorists. And so you have to wonder, would Israel have become a nation?
Boy, you can see the hand of God as you read this story. What kind of feedback do you get from unsaved Jewish people that read this book?
They are touched. They are amazed. They're telling it at their Passover table as part of the Haggadah.
It's in the same category as Moses walking through the Red Sea as if it was dry land.
It's amazing.
And what about Christians? What do they say when they read this book?
Christians come up to me and when I'm at a craft show, they don't realize who I am till they look down on the table and they see my book. When it hits them that that's the book they read, they come up to me and cry and they say, "This book has changed everything I ever thought about God wanting Jews in the camps. I don't think that way anymore."
Okay, Mishpocha, consider yourself challenged. You will so enjoy this book. You won't want to put it down. It's called The Journey of Private Galleon. We're making it available for a donation of $20. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpocha or Chalitzim, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. Or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape or CD of this week's broadcast, send a donation of $10 or more to Sid Roth, that's SIDROTH, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, or our archives, or subscribe to our radio and TV podcasts, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.